Welcome to the Dork Forest. Jackie and her pals will never bore us. Shameless confessions
about our obsessions
will make us laugh and smile. So let's explore the Dork Forest and dork out for a while.
Hey, it's Jackie Cation. Welcome to the Dork Forest. You know the websites, JackieCation.com, DorkForest.com, TheDorkForest.com. It's December, and December means you should not donate to the Dork Forest. You should donate to the Dork Forest next month. But this month, you should find a food bank and donate to a food bank because people enjoy food. And you probably have some, so you could throw them the 10 or 20 bucks that you were going to throw the Dork Forest and get on it. Anyway, let's do the credits. Mike Rickberg composed and sang that song at the beginning of the Dork Forest. He sang it with his girlfriend, Sarah Cohen. When will they marry? When? Anyway, he'll sing again at the end, the Mexican Hat Dance, words that he made up to it. Patrick Brady will fix this audio, doing vital work, and Vilmos fixes my website, JackieCation.com. Speaking of which, if you want to buy something from Amazon, which we all do, there is an Amazon banner on JackieCation.com. It's a portal into Amazon. You then do your regular ordering, and then I get a kickback. Dork Forest gets a kickback, and it doesn't cost you anything, and it's just a way to support the show whenever you order from Amazon. If you want to order stuff for Christmas, please do it now, I say, because the time has come. You have about a week, I think, to order stuff. I have some hoodies I have in stock, like two of each size, small through double X, if you want to order those. Those are $50 domestic. That includes shipping. All of my prices include shipping, or $60 international. And then there are CDs and DVDs and Dork Forest t-shirts and Ranger of the Dork Forest t-shirts all on JackieCation.com. So you can order merch if you want. The banner has been spoken of. The credits have been spoken of. This week in stand-up comedy, I'm going to Aspen, Colorado. And then for New Year's Eve, I'll be in Phoenix opening for Brian Regan at Comerica something, which I guess is a giant, giant venue and will be hilarious to do stand-up comedy at that place. Other than that, thanks a lot for tuning in, you guys. I hope you guys all have a wonderful, wonderful holiday, whatever it is. And if you don't have a holiday, I hope you have some nice peace in your lives. And let's get into it.
Hello, Rangers. My name is Joe Wilson, and some of you might recognize my voice from the first 2 years of the Dork Forest when I co-hosted with Jackie. I left the forest to tell stories, and I'd like to tell you one. This story is both a live-action series and a graphic novel. The live-action series has cast members like Marcia Wallace, who was the voice of Edna Krabappel on The Simpsons, Kirsten Van Ness, who you might know as Penelope Garcia on Criminal Minds. The story is about Don, a hitman who dies, does the whole light at the end of the tunnel thing, and hears the voices of people he killed, and comes back to life very inspired not to die. Ever. So he arranges to become a vampire, and never planned on biting his wife, but then he got hungry, and his wife bit her mother, who is now moving in for eternity. Vampire Mob. It's a comedy, a drama, has a little action, a lot of swearing, and you can watch and read it right now, for free, at vampiremob.com. Thanks. I hope you enjoy it. Vampiremob.com.
Hey, it's Jackie Cation. Welcome to the Dork Forest, sitting in my living room. Very exciting. Kelly Carlin, you're a beacon of hope.
Oh, wow.
You're a dork luminary. You are out there trying things.
I am.
You're a flower.
I'm an explorer.
You're an explorer inside your own consciousness.
Completely. And sometimes, yes, mostly inside my own house. Just recently in the last few years, I've actually left the house exploring.
Oh, congratulations on
kicking
a little agoraphobia.
I was agoraphobic in my 20s horribly, so.
Oh, for reals?
Oh, for reals.
Oh, yeah. That is
Yeah, for reals, like had to go, like when I would go to the supermarket, I would find people that I thought looked like doctors or nurses.
Yeah.
So that in case I did die in the produce section or pass out, there'd be someone with medical training there for me.
That is an obsessive compulsive sort of, I'm going to follow that gentleman. Looks like he's competent.
Yep.
Were I to pass out.
Yes.
That's a hell of a way to shop, my friend.
It was not fun.
Not fun. Well, I bet. How did you shake it? Do you have any idea?
Well, I shook the cocaine addiction around it shook the first husband.
Who encouraged it,
possibly. That was kind of creating all of the anxiety. And I didn't I didn't do the drugs that normally people do. I just did a lot of talk therapy and.
Right, because you had been doing drugs.
Yes, I've been doing the drugs that were causing it, and I decided I don't need to do any more drugs.
Right, right. So yeah. It was sort of artificially created, sort of like a little squid that was on top of
it
your brain.
It was, but if anyone who has panic attack syndrome knows, the minute you have a panic attack, it's this self-fulfilling prophecy, because I had one in my car,
yeah.
And then every time I got near my car or thought about driving, I would have one, and then
right.
In my car. So it becomes a parade of clusterfuck mind game.
You know, I never had panic attacks until I did Last Comic Standing.
Oh.
Yeah. There's nothing like something to really make you doubt yourself is to have a camera shoved in your pie hole for 7 hours and constantly someone asking some variation of, what do you think's going to happen if you don't win? And the first 3,400 times they ask you that, you go, well, it turns out I'm still going to do stand-up comedy. But when I left the program, I... literally, by that time, I was like, what will happen if I don't win? Oh, I guess I didn't win. And so I had 3 full-blown panic attacks on stage. One of them, hello, during a corporate. Guess who did not get any sort of a bump? They paid me silently after the program because I, you know, what I realized for me is that when I have a panic attack on stage and it sadly still may, you know, I'll think of it sometimes.
This is what happens, the thinking.
Right, the thinking is the worst part of it.
Yep.
And if I physically move, if I physically just, I'm holding the mic, right?
Yeah.
Just physically take a step or two left or right, I should shake myself out of it.
Yeah.
And I, it's just a geographic. It's the tiniest of all geographics.
Yeah.
And I get my sense of self back.
That's great. For me, it's about being transparent and saying to whoever's around me, I'm starting to feel a little panicky right now.
Oh, okay.
And as long as I say it out loud and I'm kind of like reality testing in a sense, you know, it's usually my husband and he'll say, you're okay. Everything's fine. Or, you know, because he knows my history.
It's very sweet.
Yeah. And I'll be like, yeah, you're right. I am okay. You know, I'm not dying. I feel like this thing might happen that's going to tell me I'm dying.
Right. If I do not quickly clench my hands, something's going
to
happen.
Yeah. I used to say to people, if God himself, during a panic attack, if God himself came down and said, you're just having a panic attack, I would say, fuck you, I'm dying. Because that's how convinced you are.
Right, right.
That's horrible.
Were you ever convinced that you saw God?
Not during the panic attacks, no.
That's really for the best. But that probably wasn't God.
Probably
that was the squid on your
brain. I would have just driven straight to UCLA and checked myself in at that point.
That's right, because you grew up here, right?
I did, yeah.
And was that... an after-school special? How was that? how did that work out?
You know
was it fun?
It's an interesting place to grow up. I mean, you know, I grew up in LA and I grew up on the west side of LA and I grew up on the west side of LA going to schools with people, a lot of people who were in the entertainment industry. So it's a very, very small little niche of humans. And, you know, we were all, I think, trying to metabolize our insane parents.
And their deal.
You know, aptly narcissistic artistic pursuits, and it was the 70s and their own partying and all of that. Yes, the 70s.
Everyone's heard so much about it. I was there. Turns out South Milwaukee, Wisconsin, not quite the party town.
No, I'm not quite Palisades 1976.
No, my brother did tell me he one time woke up underneath a bush in South Milwaukee.
Did he see God?
He said it was 1975 or 1974, and he was 17 years old, and he had just done a second all and Jack Daniels all night long.
Oh, that's such a 70s combo.
It really felt like it when he was telling the tale. My brother, Phil Cation, people see him out. But my favorite, it's one of my favorite stories of his, because he tells about how he decided to join the army because he had two dreams. And the main dream was he wanted to be a drug dealer of repute in South Milwaukee. So he thought if he went to Vietnam, he could make connections to buy hash.
This is a plan.
Or if he went to Germany, if he didn't get war duty, he could get heroin.
Yes.
And you're like, what's happening in your head at 17? He said, I don't think you understand. Secanol and Jack Daniels. And so he said he went to the Army Navy recruitment thing and he goes up to the Army guy. That's what they're called. And he goes up to the Army guy. He said, hey, I want to enlist. And the guy goes, well, what do you want to do in the Army? And the only thing he knew about the Army, because he comes from our family, was Sergeant Rock, the comic book.
Right.
And he said, oh, infantry. And the captain, he said, Captain, what was his name? Jim or Captain Barry? I don't know what his name was, but he said, The guy looked at me like Christmas had come early.
Oh, sure.
The bonus
Are you
for
kidding?
Just finding a cannon fodder just loose on the street. But here's the thing. He didn't end up joining because 3 weeks later he punched a cop and they turned him down.
Ah.
Yeah.
Some sort of self-protection there. Right. Self-destructive on the outside,
right,
but
right.
No.
Could have been 75, the only guy in the world who was thinking of joining the army.
Oh my God. To become a drug dealer.
Right. Well, you got to dare to dream. You got to dare to dream, Phil Cation.
He did. He had a plan.
He did. So here's the thing. So it started out, the 70s will encourage you to do an internal clock check. And that is a lot of your dorkdoms. You know, you send me a list.
Yeah.
Everybody sends me a list, Kelly Carlin.
Yes.
And it's at Kelly_Carlin on the Twitter.
Yes.
Also the Instagram or no?
Don't have the Instagram yet. Don't know.
Okay.
I think I have an account over there. Don't really know what I do with it.
Well, you take pictures, but you can do it right there on Twitter.
It's what I do. Yeah. It's I don't want another step in the
right.
social. There's enough to do already.
And KellyCarlin.com, obviously. Carlin
yes.
with a C. And you're at the Falcon Theater. January 28th through March
with
something.
With my solo show.
With a solo show. That's neat. What's it called?
A Carlin Home Companion. Thank you, Jackie. Gets it.
I do get it.
Directed by Paul Provenza.
Oh, sweet.
Been
sweet.
Doing it for about 3 years. Been doing all the comedy festivals with it for...
Did you go to Edinburgh?
I did not do that because that costs about $20,000 to do that. You
At
basically
least?
Have... Yeah. You,
yeah.
If you're willing to lose $20,000... And the thing is, my show is about my, you know, growing up with my family.
Right.
And my dad wasn't necessarily a huge thing in England. So it's not like I'm going to get...
Oh. Right,
yeah.
So it's not going to be a giant response.
No. Yeah, so it's here in the States. But I did all the JFLs, and I did South By, and I did the Sketch Fest. And so I've done all those kind of comedy festivals.
How funny
festivals
would it be if you would went to Edinburgh, and they said, well, he's no Doug Stanhope, your dad. Who I love, Doug Stanhope.
Who,
but they love Doug Stanhope.
Doug Stanhope is one of my personal heroes.
Oh,
I love him.
That guy's amazing.
Yep.
Anyway.
Agreed.
But let's do this, because I like Zen Buddhism.
Yeah.
Do you consider yourself a Buddhist?
I think...
You want to be put in a box, man.
Yes, pretty much. If you're a Buddhist, you wouldn't call yourself a Buddhist. Because
how they know, man. Make me one with everything.
Exactly. I started studying after my mom died in 97. I wanted to be able to be with death because my mom died.
Oh, the grieving.
We didn't face her death with a lot of we just faced it with a lot of dysfunction in our family. And I thought, I want to do
Were you
this.
Looking for style and panache?
I was looking for at least being in my body.
Okay.
Yeah. And I wasn't at all. I completely left my body the minute she was diagnosed with, she'd been sick years before, was fine, and then was suddenly diagnosed with liver cancer and died 5 weeks later.
Oh, that is.
Yeah. It was very fast and very aggressive, and it was already very far along. So,
so you started studying Zen Buddhism.
So I did. Because I wanted to not be so terrified of all of that. And I thought, you know, those Zen Buddhists, they do those death haikus, man.
Oh, do they? What do they do?
There's this famous tradition of Zen masters on their deathbed writing a haiku or speaking a haiku in the moment.
Define haiku again.
A haiku is a three-lined, 17 syllables. I think it's 5-7-5.
Okay.
And these guys spontaneously, or maybe they're planning it.
Maybe they wrote
maybe
it out earlier.
Maybe they're writing it. They've got it on the palm of their hand or something.
Shitty first draft of deathbed haiku number 12.
Awesome. And I thought, well, if they have the wherewithal to write a haiku while they're dying.
I can probably process my mother's passing
away. I just
away.
Want to be in my body.
Right.
You know, or when my dad dies, you know, I want to be present. I want to be like not so.
Were you numbed out? Was it that?
Yeah, it was numbed out, denial. It was just, let's all pretend it's not happening, even though we know it's happening, which was our MO in our family anyway. So we just... You know, in times of stress, you regress back to your old patterns. And so we did, you know, and it was really miserable. And I really wanted to be able to have those conversations with my mom where I'd say, you know, what do we want to say to each other before all of this?
Oh,
and
wow.
We didn't have those conversations.
Right.
Because we were all just like, oh, do you want some orange juice?
Yeah.
And it was
it's hard to grill somebody on their deathbed.
Yeah.
What do you want? Was there anything you want to say to me?
Yeah. Right.
Here's the weird thing. My mother died. My stepmother of 25 years, mm-hmm. 40, whatever, 77 years, died 2.5 years ago. Mm-hmm. And she died unexpectedly. I spoke to her a week before she died. And, during that phone conversation, famously in my head, she said, I said something and she goes, I'm not going to die. And I said, I did not say you were going to die. And she said, yeah. And then we kept talking, and then she died, it turns out. Mm. I didn't kill her. I am not the one.
I didn't
but
think so.
The weird thing is, as she dies, my father, I go back for the funeral. My father and my stepmother are estranged. And my father, the first thing he says to me, he says, you know, I'm going to die one day. And I said, nice work making it about you. Almost immediately, Dad. That took, what, 7 to 10 minutes? How's it going over there? So the way we deal with grief... is we internally, oh my God, how is this going to affect me?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Which is the shittiest way to deal with death.
Yeah.
Because you're just like, well, guess who's dying? Not you, weirdo.
Yeah.
Her siblings, crazy lunatic siblings, except for my Aunt Pam, all made it about themselves. I mean, I think that's the go-to.
I think it is. Well, because I think we immediately face this reality, like, holy shit, this really does happen.
Right. Had you ever had any death in your family before besides grandparents?
No, not really. I mean, I'd had in 17, we had a friend died in a car accident, which is always one of those things.
Yeah.
Had a couple people, but
nobody this.
And I'm an only child and I was very enmeshed with my parents.
Right.
So this whole thing was like, and my mother had almost died when I was a kid. She was an alcoholic and she was down to 87 pounds at one point and almost died from
right.
it and resurrected from that. So it's just, but it really is that thing where you're like, this isn't like a pretend thing in my head or something we just talk about.
Yeah.
This person is gone. Like
right.
And your mind takes the shock of it. The beginning, you're like, they're really not here.
Right. I can't, the only person I can complain about my mother's sisters to is my mother.
Right.
And she is not available.
And the person that I would have processed my mother's grief, my mother's death with, is my mother.
Exactly.
And I would like find myself grabbing the phone to call her.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd be like, ooh. And so I actually gave myself permission to have fake phone conversations with my mother to process this.
That is awesome. You know, that's Andy's dad died right before my stepmom died.
Wow.
And his dad died April 1st. He literally said, you think it's an April Fool's joke? He would do that.
Mm.
And I was like, yeah, but his wife wouldn't have done it. And
right.
he was like, I know.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
he had Lou Gehrig's.
Mm.
So he did have those conversations.
I bet.
Because he went back every 3 or 4 weeks and spent a long weekend with him.
Yeah.
We were just getting out of the debt for that. No better money was ever spent though.
Yeah.
That last 10 months that he spent with his father. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
You know, and he had never had anyone, he is an only child as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it was his first parent to die. He's been very attentive to his mother since his father has passed away.
I bet.
So, but he did have those conversations to some extent.
Wow.
You know?
That's great. That's fantastic.
It's so hard though.
It is. It's not.
And he gave himself permission to call, by the way. Oh, he gave to talk to him.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I was just like, you know, I got to figure out how to do this. And this
what
is,
would she say?
Yeah, what would she say? And the great thing is that do you hear it? You hear what they would say. It's already internalized. And that's when you start to say, oh, her strength and her wisdom is already in me.
Yep.
It's a part of me. So, you know.
Neat.
Yeah. It was the healthiest thing I could do, even though it sounds insane.
Slightly, but not really,
yeah.
because everyone's like,
especially if you've lost a parent, you get it.
You get it. And it's
a club. I just want to say the minute you lose a parent.
Oh, right.
You get this thing. Like I say, and people said it to me when I lost my mom. And I say it to people now, I'm like, welcome to the club.
Right. Somebody said that to me after my stepmom died, which is weird because my mom, my biological mom, who I have always referred to as my dead mom.
Right.
She died when I was 7.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody ever mentioned her ever again.
Oh, that's
very disappointing.
That's a whole different weird thing.
Well, that was weird. My brothers would occasionally, they had canonized her accidentally. And I had sort of vilified her.
Yeah. And it's usually the choice, one or the other.
Well, if you're given no information.
Yes. And you're going to make it up.
Right. So when I was 33, which was when she died, I do a joke. She was 33. Age of Christ? Coincidence? Yes. Yes. Because she was not Christ-like. But she was doing the best she could.
Right.
And, but you know how you have to come to peace with the failure of the parenting that has happened to you?
100%. Yep.
Because they seriously.
That's my solo show.
Exactly. That's a beautiful arc to it, too.
Yeah.
Because not only did she impart all of her wisdom and all of her strength, she imparted all of her crazy.
Yep.
And all of her.
And there's a compassion and a forgiveness that you get to have a relationship with the crazy.
Yeah.
And the wisdom. And really, and it is, it's that thing, either you canonize them or you vilify them. And then at some point you humanize them.
Yeah.
And that's when you realize, oh, they've got a little of all of that in there. And it's, what do I want to do with it? How do I want to walk through the last 40 years of my life or whatever it is that I've got left in relationship with this?
Yeah. I don't want to be mad. I don't want to be mad forever.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I think about her, and my father, still alive, almost died this summer, lived to irritate me so bad last 2 weeks ago that I was like, I don't even think I can talk to him right now.
Wow.
And, well, I did a Dork Forest with him that I don't know that I will ever, that I will ever air, just because I will have to listen to it and edit it and just sort of clean it up, right? And because he's a salesman and everything is a sale, right? So it led to women. Mm. So it led to my stepmother. So it led to a math equation that I did not approve of about him meeting my mother, my stepmother and my mother. And I believe two or three times during the hour that I talked to him, I said to him, you know, you're not the hero of that story, Dad.
Oh, wow.
That actually, the math doesn't work on that. And my father doesn't have any remorse.
Yeah.
He doesn't even, he's like, he's not a guy to apologize for something he did ever.
Right.
So I recently realized that I have never learned how to, Andy pointed this out, because I realized I always knew when I was a kid that there were consequences to my actions,
mm-hmm.
but that when you got the consequences, the question was not, how do I not do that again? The question was, well, was that worth it? Right. Was it funny enough?
Right.
Well, did you get enough money?
Right. If you're
going
to pay the price, you need to get the value out of it.
Right. Did you get it? It's fucking value.
It is.
And I got that from him.
Interesting.
Because I mentioned things that he did when I was a kid, and he was like, what did I say? What did I do?
Right.
He's like, well, I was an idiot. And then there's a pause, and he always says, well, we're all just doing the best we could. And you're like, Jesus God. No apology, nothing?
One sorry?
No. All right. Well.
All right. We won't be expecting that anymore.
Right. Well,
That's the great thing.
And
when you realize that. I no longer, it's the expectation is where the suffering comes from.
Yeah.
We expect people to be different and they aren't. That's when the suffering comes. So,
amen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's kind of like how I kind of view the world. I mean, I haven't given up on the world, but at the same time, it's like, well, guess what? If you expect there to be some sort of major change when there's an election in America, you're a fool.
Example.
And you're disappointed? Like, really?
Didn't you know you were voting for an enormously moderate Democrat?
Yes,
I'm so
always,
sorry.
Yes.
I know he's a black man. He was supposed to be magical.
Right.
But sadly, that was not occurring.
No, there's too many corporations.
Right. And he is a gentleman who wanted to be president first.
Yes.
He is a human who was willing to become president. That is its own breed.
That is, and it's a very small breed of people. And it's,
I wouldn't want it with a,
no,
with a,
the worst job in the universe.
Right. Ugh. So how did you study Zen Buddhism?
I started
go to self-help.
I went to I had a tape of this guy Thich Nhat Hanh, who's a Vietnamese Zen master.
Okay.
He's very famous. He's very big introduced the word mindfulness basically to the West.
Oh, wow.
He was nominated by Martin Luther King in the early 60s for the Nobel Peace Prize because in Vietnam, he and his monks and nuns would take people from either side of the war to help them heal. I mean, you know, to
like PSTD.
And people who were actually, who were starving, people who were homeless or whatever.
You just take anybody in, it didn't matter the politics.
Did not matter the politics because he was, you know, he's this Zen Buddhist. And of course, he was vilified by both sides. And so he was exiled. He ended up living in Europe. So I had a tape of his from, I don't know from where. And I would listen to this meditation tape where he was like, you are breathing in, you are the mountain. Breathing out, you are solid. Breathing in, you are the flower. Breathing out, you are fresh.
Interesting.
And it would like, do you want me to pause?
No, no. I want you to tell that story while I go hang up on whoever calls.
Okay.
It's a great moment. Have a salty, dark chocolate.
I am. And then I'm going to have to speak like a pirate, which I'm not quite sure what that is, how that sounds, but I'm willing to have a bite of this. Uh-huh. There she goes. So I have this tape. Oh, they're very persistent.
They are persistent.
So I had this meditation tape and I'd listened to it, and it was the only thing that, because of my panic attacks and all that, it was the only thing that like really calmed me. And so I read, and I bought some Buddhist magazine and read that he was going to be teaching a retreat, a 5-day retreat up in Santa Barbara.
He had to be 80 years old.
No. Actually, he's in his 90s. Yeah, he was in his 70s. I think like late 60s, early 70s. This is 97.
Right.
So now, mind you, I had never meditated on a cushion. Wow. Is this an emergency?
This seems persistent.
It does. Do we have a ringer off mode on that thing?
I don't know what a major. I don't know. I have major. You know what? I don't have a ringer off.
How great would it be if I just let him leave the message and then edited this all out? We have it because Andy Ashcraft is a safety mouse.
I see. A safety mouse. I hope there's no test results happening right now, Jackie.
Right. We're going to find out that Andy has a butt lesion over the door.
And he's
forest.
Impotent. But, you know, other than that, he's fine, really.
Oh, he's not impotent. Ladies and gentlemen, too much info. Let's see what can be done at minute 23 to clean up the phone.
It's okay.
Anyway.
So I had this tape, but I had, you know, I didn't really meditate. I just listened to the tape. So I'd never done any what they call sitting meditation in my entire life. I had never.
Oh, right. The sitting where you're supposed to sit for minutes and breathe
right.
And let thoughts pass by you.
Right. Exactly. Which I know how to do now. But then I didn't know that. But I just went ahead and signed up for a 5-day meditation retreat in Santa Barbara. Because, you know, it's one of those things. My mother just died and it's 4 months later. And part of what happens, at least happened for me when my mom died, was, and when a parent dies, is this, like, you realize that life is short and you could be hit by a truck tomorrow. So if there's anything you need to be doing or want to be doing, now is the time to start.
Right.
And why put it off at this point?
Right. Why keep putting things off? And one of the things that I was really interested in was pursuing a spiritual path in some way. I didn't know what that meant. I'd always been curious and I was into all the new age crap and in my 20s and all of that. But I wanted something solid, you know, where I could write a haiku on my deathbed, basically.
Oh, right.
Right. So I went up to this retreat and I'm picturing, I don't know what I was picturing. It was at UCSB. It was in the dormitories there. It was before the school year started.
Thank God. Have you seen those children?
Oh my God. Yes. And I don't know. I pictured 100 people sitting around, a Buddhist monk. There were 1,200 people signed up for this thing.
1,200?
1,200. Because he only comes to America.
Famous.
Yes. And he only comes to America twice a year, once on the East Coast, once on the West Coast or something.
Right.
And then I realized not only are there 1,200 people.
Welcome to my home, Kelly Carlin.
It's full of noises. There's a lot of ringing going on here.
It's Maria Bamford.
Oh, my God. A doll.
Maria Bamford is calling me on my cell phone. I usually do turn the cell phone off. I don't know how to actually turn the home phone off. But she's going to have to... We're going to have to talk another time, sadly. And she... Because I told her...
She's so cool.
She's the coolest.
Oh, my God.
And she's good people.
She's...
So, but 1,200 people
1,200
in
people in Santa Barbara.
For 5 days.
For 5 days. And I find out immediately that, A, I'm sharing a room with someone else. I'm an only child. I don't share rooms with people. especially people who... And here's the kind of people that I come to these retreats at times.
Oh.
You know, they're dressed in a certain way and they act in a certain way through their... They want you to know that
they're... Are they hippie skippy wannabes? Or?
Yeah, they're a little more closer to God than you are. Like there's a little bit of narcissism and there's a competition going on.
Yeah.
They call it spiritual materialism in that world.
Oh, is it?
It's like a collecting of spiritual experiences, you know.
Well, TikTok.
Yes.
On my bucket list, I need to be taught by this guy who seems to be closer to God than I am.
Right, exactly. And then I realized when I looked at the schedule that we would be doing things like sitting for 45 minutes at a time, three times a day in these sitting meditations.
Wow.
And I had not even done maybe 5 minutes yet.
Right,
so,
right. Did you fall over in a heap and fall asleep?
I was just a little, I was itchy and agitated. And yes, you would get sleepy. And at some point I would just get up and leave because it was just too much. Like,
right.
You feel
just
like I will
yourself.
Scream. Yeah. And you're sitting with all these people and it's very like.
Is it shoulder to shoulder?
Yeah, not quite, but it's, you know, and we're in the big gymnasium there at UCSB. And so it's all these pillows on the floor and we're all there.
Right.
And I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. So my brain is just. Mind, crazy, crazy monkey mind going on. And so it was overwhelming, but they'd said, oh, in the morning, at dawn, another thing, I'm not a morning person, really. I do not get up at dawn. Dawn is not something.
Dawn is so beautiful. I like to see it from the other side myself.
Yes.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah. Is it 4:30? Oh, well, I might as well stay up and see the dawn.
Right. Exactly. I've seen pictures of it. So we do this walking meditation. I'm like, well, you know what? I've signed up for this stuff, sitting, walking, whatever. I want to go out. So I get up early. And there's like 200 or 300 of us out there. And I'm like, other people slept in. Like already now I've got the like.
Oh, now you're the spiritual material.
Way more spiritual because I'm willing to get out of bed at dawn. Hello. And
I bet you it lends itself to that though.
Yes.
Because all of a sudden you're just like, well, I'm working on myself. I'm
right.
Clearly getting better.
Yeah.
Well, then you.
Right.
And then you're just, your gaze goes to the person next to you.
Completely. It's such a trap. It's a total trap.
Right.
It is a complete trap, which is so funny because if you're pursuing it all, you're not really in it. So,
right. You're supposed to. It's supposed to. Well, maybe is that sort of part of the journey as well, is to sort of let go of that superiority
for
eventually?
Sure. For sure. Yes.
Do you think that like Oprah has?
She's quite a seeker. I think really she has such an impulse to share what she learns.
Yeah.
That I think that's her main impulse. And I wonder because, you know, I have that too. I'm going to be a teacher. I'm going to do this and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But really, if you're really with it, you don't talk about it. You don't.
Right. Right. Well,
you just are it.
Well, you know, in the Talmud, and I say that. And I mean the Old Testament.
Yes.
There's that whole thing about how you're supposed to pray, but you're not supposed to pray in public. You're just supposed to do it and then not pat yourself on the back.
Right.
Because you're going to break your arm. They don't say that in the Bible. I think that was something, a very Wisconsin saying when I was a child. You're going to hurt yourself patting yourself on the back like that. You're going to break your arm. And but yeah, I mean, it's supposed to be.
Yeah. It's supposed to be a private, and you're just supposed to live the life, do the work. If you're going to be of service, be of service. You know, it's not about getting the gold stars.
Yeah.
But my personality, it was about getting the gold stars. It's all I knew how to do is get gold stars.
One after another.
Did I get
a certificate? Did I finish something?
Look what I did. Aren't I shinier now?
It's so tempting.
Please love me.
Yes, exactly.
Please love me now.
Frank Conniff used to do this joke about how everybody should just walk down the streets just screaming, love me! Love me! Frank Conniff, so fucking funny.
Oh, I love him.
Oh, he's just amazing.
To death.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So,
so you went on this walk.
Oh, so I went on this walk and if you've never seen walking meditation,
I have not.
It's so slow. You're practically going backwards. It's so slow.
Wait, you're barely
because
walking?
You're not, it's not about walking. It's about being present as you use forward motion. It's about learning to be present while doing.
Oh.
Yeah. It's learning to be connected to your being
maddening.
While you're doing.
I bet you that's very powerful.
It is. It is. And yet when your first time you're doing it, you're like, why are we walking so slow? And it's, you're walking so slow, you're almost falling over. Like, you can't balance that because you're not made to walk at that pace.
Yeah.
But we are, and Thich Nhat Hanh is there, and it's beautiful, and the sun is coming up, and I look out, we're on the beach, and I look out, and I shit you not, there are dolphins frolicking in the water, and I'm like, wow, this shit works.
And then, the dolphins know that we're trying to get better.
The dolphins totally get it. Yeah. And then we like go and UCSB, there's this gorgeous nature reserve on the property and there's like all these birds and it's a real nature reserve. And we're walking in, two lines of people. There's two little paths and we're walking. And I look over at one point, we're up in this nature reserve and there's like this little meadow and about 40 feet away, there's a fox, a little fox, which I'd never seen a real fox in real life before.
Just in the wild.
They're so cute. And he's doing his little fox thing, which is staring at a hole in the ground and like pouncing on it because that's what they do.
Right. He's waiting for the
gopher. He's hunting. Yeah. Well, there's like 400 of us and we're walking by in this mindfulness walking meditation and he's 40 feet away and he has no idea we're there.
Oh, wow.
It was so powerful for me to see, like, whatever
he's
we
like,
were.
We're not interrupting his work.
Yeah,
his day.
We weren't even like creating enough something for him to be like freaked out or aware or scared. He was just going about his business and we were going about ours. And that's when I was like, okay, there's something to this stuff. I don't understand it at all.
Right.
But there's something here that I want more of.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay.
Yeah.
And how long was that walk? Was it over an hour?
It was like a 45 minute walk.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And so, did you do a loop or did you get somewhere and then you're like, now we're going
to
walk back?
Yeah. I think we like got somewhere and then we all walked back to the dormitory. But one of the things they had us do during this retreat, this is so great. So, you know, they have these big bell towers on campuses.
Yeah.
And, right. And I think it's like every half hour they, or maybe every 15 minutes they ring, whatever it was. So Thich Nhat Hanh had said to us, he had taught us this thing about when you hear a bell, you stop and breathe. And actually during the retreat in the dorms, they would ring the bell. And no matter what you were doing, brushing your teeth or whatever, you would just stop and take a breath, come back to the self and breathe and then move on. And it's this practice that you use. I do it
all day long.
It's to
acknowledge that an angel has gotten its wings.
Yeah. Yes.
It's a wonderful life.
So he said, when you hear the bell tower on the campus, go ahead and everyone stop and take a breath, no matter what you're doing. If we're at a meal or you're walking somewhere. So there was a big quad where they had all these classrooms and we were getting instruction during the day from other people and question and answer stuff about Buddhism. Big quad, and it was in between sessions and everyone was kind of walking and there were people on the campus who were just normally work there and live there, you know. First day, bell rings, all the retreat people stop and breathe, which was about 60% of the people in this quad, and about 30% of the people or 40% of the people quad had no idea what was going on and are doing this kind of like looking at it like they're
spooky.
Still walking because it's a little creepy. It's a little Twilight Zone-y.
Yeah. If 750 people that you're standing next to all of a sudden do one thing and it's not dance.
And and this is way before flash mobs and shit like that. Like there's nothing like that in the consciousness of the zeitgeist.
Right. There's no reason to think that it's not the Moonies.
But by the end of the fifth day, everyone in the quad was stopping and breathing.
Oh.
And this is once again, it was one of those moments where you're like, weird. We're like, we're enlightening the people around us who haven't even signed up for enlightenment.
Right. They didn't have $1,000. What the fuck? Stop breathing. Stop breathing. No. And luckily you share.
Yes. And so it was one of those things where it was like, once again, holy shit, this shit's powerful. Like, I don't understand it yet, but sign me up. So that's what I've been doing the last 15, 17 years. Sitting on a cushion.
Sitting on a cushion, letting it all wash over you.
And walking slowly.
And walking very slowly and breathing whenever you hear a bell.
Stopping when I hear a bell.
I wish I had a bell.
If you see a woman out in the world.
I want you to be performing because you do storytelling and stuff. And then just like in the middle of the story, I'm like, ding, ding, ding. Such a jackass move. I was like, what do you think's going to happen? Do you think she'll stop?
Do you think she'll stop breathing?
So the days were that. So that was a 5-day retreat.
Yes.
How was the food?
was it vegetarian.
Yeah.
And we had to eat. We also were asked to eat mindfully, which means to eat very slowly and to chew and to contemplate all of the hands that it took to bring this food to your plate, which is a really profound kind of gratitude thing about food anyway, to imagine everything from the planting to the,
to the harvesting,
to the putting it in a truck, to all the people it takes to move it from the truck to the distribution to the, every hand.
Right.
It's a profound meditation. And the point of it is understanding that we are all what they call interdependent. There's no I. We think there's an I, but there really is only a we.
Well, let me tell you, one time when Jennifer McLean and I were living together, when I first moved here, we were moving from our studio apartment where we lived for 3 years. The corner of the dining room was my privacy. It was nice. I had a mattress on the bed to a giant sort of open studio that was like two bedrooms stacked on top of each other. Mm-hmm. It was like a giant bunk bed.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just rooms. Upstairs.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
We had our own sort of rooms that were curtained off.
Right.
And, our friend Jim Wooster, Jennifer McLean on the original 200, one of the original 200 episodes of the show, Jim Wooster on the first episode of the pre-recorded. Feel free to listen to the old shows, folks. Anyway, the deal is this, is they were moving my mattress, the two of them. And Jennifer did something wrong in the movement. Mm-hmm. And, Jim said, there's no I in team. And Jennifer McLean said, there's no Jackie in team. And because Jackie is not helping us move her own damn furniture. That has stuck with me. That's inspired me to be of more service to humanity.
Clearly.
It has made an impact because that happened, I believe, in 2000. I love that. I mean, I do when we do sort of a prayer before the meal, mm-hmm. I always do thank the truckers and the harvesters and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But to think of every hand.
Yeah.
That is quite a litany.
Yeah.
That is everybody's involved.
Yeah. And it really immediately opens your heart. It's just, you can't help but just suddenly be like, wow, there is.
So are there books that you're reading or are there people that you're going to?
There's a ton of books. God knows there's a ton of books and magazines and people you can go to. I've kind of cycled through a lot of stuff. I ended up practicing and studying with a local group in Santa Monica,
mm-hmm.
And still friends with them. But, you know, it evolves over 17 years. It's really a private practice for me now. And every once in a while I'll read Alan Watts is a huge, he's a man who in the 70s, he was in San Francisco and he's a white guy philosopher who really understood Zen. Like he's a kind of person who phrases sentences and things that like kind of makes your mind blow a little bit, like ping, like you get a little ping of your brain.
Yeah.
I'll pick up an Alan Watts book and let him blow my mind. A lot of his lectures are on, he's got a podcast. They still play his stuff.
Yeah.
I'll listen to him when I need to kind of recenter in that point of view. But
for the most part, you're good on your own.
Yeah. Yeah. And I have a teacher now. Genpo Roshi is my teacher and I work with him sometimes. And, but yeah, I mean, it's you kind of know what your shit is and what you need, but it's really about the practice. It's about a daily, and I'm not a stringent daily person, but when I am, my life is a lot better.
Well, yeah, I would imagine if you woke up to sort of calm your mind before you went out into the world, that would...
It's about detaching from your shit. It's about really, like you said earlier, like, oh, is that where you watch your thoughts go by? Like, it is about going, oh, that's just a thought.
Right.
Oh, there's a plan.
Okay.
Oh, there's a memory.
Yeah.
Oh, there's an emotion. You're the observer of everything.
Okay.
And it's a little vacation.
Right.
It's a little slideshow. It is. It's a 20-minute vacation from your fucked up mind.
Right. Well, yeah, because I have a consistent committee meeting going on.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. Well, who doesn't?
We all do. Yeah.
And so here's the good news. Nobody gets to hear, nobody has to hear the unabridged minutes.
Right.
What I like to do is I like to tighten it up, and I like to spread out the minutes amongst different people.
Yes, and then I'm sure you turn some of it into stand-up comedy.
Well, yeah, because I've never been a jealous person, and Andy's my first boyfriend and husband ever and so I'd never been with anybody, mm-hmm. and so I'd never ever been jealous because I always thought, well, this probably isn't going to work. I don't have any rights to his time, but he seems to like me. All right, so we'll stick it out. But I must be becoming more secure in my sense of self because we were at a party at Marie Bamford's house a month ago, and he was talking to this woman, and I remember looking over there going, well, she's a lot younger than I am. She's taller. What's happening over there? What do you think he's talking about? And luckily, I do enough internal mm-hmm. committee scrubbing mm-hmm. That I went, it's a party. He's probably talking to her. Crazy. Hey, Cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs.
They're not sneaking off to the bathroom.
Right. It's not any sort of. And then, because on the awesome. Same, like, and luckily, because I had just also thought, because I was listening to the Guardians of the Galaxy soundtrack, mm-hmm. as you do.
Wow.
Yeah. And do you remember the Escape Pina Colada song?
I do
from
not.
From the 70s. Do you like pina coladas?
God, yes, of course.
It's got a nice fat beat. The kids can dance to
yes.
it. Let me tell you something. It's about two philandering jackasses.
Yes,
and
basically.
In the end, they find each other. She couldn't be more disappointed. It's him. And he's like, oh, I've never listened to you before in our relationship. You like pina coladas and getting walking in the rain? And you want to make love on the Cape on a dune? What's happening? And so it was like this whole weird. And I was thinking about that, and I was thinking, you know, I never think Andy's going to cheat on me mm-hmm. because my self-absorption is so complete,
right.
and I would never think of cheating on him.
Right.
And my self-absorption says, well, why would he do something that I wouldn't do? You wouldn't like that.
Right.
I wouldn't like that, so why would he like that? And I told him that, and he could not stop laughing. He was like, well, fair enough. And so, I mean, it's...
I love it.
It's at least it's not... At least I know I'm crazy.
Yes.
Right?
And I think at a certain age... Here's what I think. At a certain age, you know you're crazy and you know how to deal with your craziness.
Right.
And if you get to that certain age and you still don't know you're crazy, there's really no hope.
Right. And it's exhausting to be around that person.
Yeah. I partition those people.
Yeah. I can't
partition them away.
I'm like, oh, and yet we are distantly related.
Yeah. Well, that's a whole other issue.
Well,
yeah.
It really is because you have to, and you just have to say, okay, well, this is a finite amount of time.
For sure.
And
absolutely.
You're like, you are mind-numbingly boring.
Yeah.
And weirdly enough, tactless at
yeah.
the same time. How do you do it?
Yeah.
How do you do it? It's like, because like someone will say something as innocuous as, oh, you guys have a water cooler.
Mm-hmm.
You guys have not Brita, but like the people bring the gallon.
The sparklets or whatever.
Yeah, sparklets.
Yeah.
So you guys have one of those. And someone will just say that, or you'll get up and get the water, and she'll say, you know, they have to deliver those water bottles.
Mm.
Out loud. And you're like, yeah, we all, what's going to happen next? What is the end
of
that story?
Yeah, what's the next beat on this?
Is there a story? There is not. There is not. She is literally just going to tell us that they drive in a truck and drop off. And you're like, you aren't mentally, I mean, she's a smart woman.
Yeah. But felt need to share that.
But just boring.
Yeah.
I just assume it's boredom.
She doesn't get a lot out a lot, clearly.
Maybe
just
not.
Just needs to share these thoughts.
And in other ways, very smart. Other ways, well-read.
That's always tricky, too, with people. You get these really smart, smart, brilliant people, and then they do things, and you're like, wow, that's really from my Jungian psychology, that is what we call the shadow. It's like that's where the part of you that's so unconscious in your personality that you have no idea.
Oh, that
you're doing that
things?
Or exists or that it's wrong or that it's
right.
inappropriate.
Well, that's interesting because whenever you're alerted to facts, someone was telling me, is when you don't know that you're being rude, when you don't know,
mm-hmm.
it was like I didn't know that when I would do something mean, mm-hmm. I knew there would be consequences.
Right.
What I've recently learned, granted, Nope, not even that. I mean, a little too recently is what I'm saying, is that when you do something wrong and you've hurt somebody,
yes,
or you have angered somebody, mm-hmm, and you go, oh, well, that's the consequences of that. Someone's right. Feelings are hurt. Someone's angry at me. I might get punched in the face. Whatever the consequences are, I always said, oh, well, those are the consequences. And then I will either... was it good enough?
Right. Was it worth it?
Was it worth it?
Right.
Was there value?
Right.
Was there enough value to reap these consequences? I have recently learned a very basic thing that's not the end of it.
Right.
The end of it is to genuinely apologize.
Yes.
And to not do it again.
Yes.
There's a two-step thing going on there.
Yes.
One is to say you're sorry, and then two, don't go there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if only, because about 5 or 6 years ago, I started apologizing,
mm-hmm,
for things that I was doing. And I've told this story before on the Dork Forest. Rangers have heard it. But the thing is it's a thing where I have been rude, and I made a rule that I had to apologize in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And if I don't apologize in the moment, I have to go back,
mm-hmm,
and find, for example, the bag boy I whipped a bell pepper at because
right,
he was bagging my groceries wrong.
Right.
And that gentleman, uncomfortable when I had come back, and he looked at me like I was going to hit him, because that's why people come back, usually with a gun or some sort of
right,
bigger item than a bell right, pepper.
Escalation.
Right, escalation. And I said, I'm back to apologize. I'm so sorry. That was insane. And I genuinely apologize. And he was like, all right. But it's the only reason I stopped being mean again.
Right.
Was because I didn't want to apologize.
Right.
It was not from an altruistic
right,
feeling of, well, I hurt that person's feelings.
Right.
That has been an even newer realization.
It is an onion, isn't it? Don't we just unfold ourselves and just, we're like, oh shit.
Welcome to Growth Week.
Yeah, exactly. Welcome to that moment where you're like, that's just, for me, it was always like, what do you mean I'm not perfect?
Yeah.
What do you mean I'm not the most pleasant, perfect human on earth? Like, that I've actually affected someone through some unconscious action I've done. What do you mean I'm unconscious?
Right.
I do everything to be conscious. It's a frightening kind of moment for the ego, because you're like, what?
Right.
Huh?
Right. And to try to live in the moment and to try to be aware how your actions affect other
yeah,
people. I recently saw, this last year, I've met Brian Regan,
mm-hmm,
and he is the most conscious person at his sort of fame level that I've met,
mm,
that makes sure that he is consciously polite to everyone around him.
Right.
And he may not, he can't possibly remember everyone's names, but he is very polite, and he's like, mm-hmm, to all the staff, mm-hmm, like the sound guy and the
lighting
guy.
That's the way I was taught by my father, yes.
To make sure
yes,
that everyone at least...
feels acknowledged.
Yeah, feels
yeah,
acknowledged.
Absolutely.
And it was exceptional.
Mm-hmm.
It was lovely to see.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't seem to have any reward to it.
The value is...
Right. The value was missing for
right,
me.
Right, right. It's really about giving others value.
Right.
Yes.
Right, it's giving out.
Yes.
Like I know comics who will sit and sign things forever, uh-huh, after shows. And that is a lovely thing, and take pictures and do that.
Mm-hmm.
Chris Titus was the first person I ever saw do it for like 2.5 hours. He
mm-hmm,
sat and he met every single person who wanted to meet him and took pictures with them. But they were also buying t-shirts and DVDs and stuff. And I always thought, oh, well, that's a really smart business idea.
Right.
It was also a really nice thing to do because they were fans.
Yes.
And they wanted to meet
and
him.
And they came out.
Right.
And they
Brian
support
Regan,
you.
There's 1,500 to 3,000 people there.
Yeah.
He can't.
Right, right.
He can't sit there and meet them all.
Right.
So the best he can do is to make sure at least the immediate
yeah,
13 people around him, he can be nice to those people.
Yeah.
And there was no value. I didn't
yeah,
see.
Yeah, and there is that altruistic thing where if you're not trained in it, if you didn't get training in it in your family.
Right.
You know, which...
Right.
We've already
clearly,
discussed.
Clearly.
Clearly
there was some sort of error.
There was a missing piece there. It is an interesting, there's a thing about there is value for you in the end.
Right.
But it's not
right,
a direct moment consequence one.
I get so much out of not carrying the weight of being mean to somebody.
Yeah.
Of sort of a clean slate kind of thing.
Yeah.
I've cleaned that up. That person has accepted or not accepted my apology. And I have at least said,
mm-hmm,
I'm sorry for that. I'm going to try not to do that in the future because that was mean or insane or right. that was dumb. And they go, okay. Nobody, by the way, that I've ever apologized has ever said, oh, don't worry about it. Every single person has been like, okay.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Received your apology wholeheartedly.
Yes.
Taking it in.
They've taken it in, whether to be accepted or yes. to just be acknowledged.
Yes, but letting you know that
letting
they're
you know
not...
that I needed to yes. do that. That was the correct response
now,
to me losing it at a Starbucks.
Now, do you go out in the world and do things to just make people happy and thrilled and joyful? Like with Andy, do you just like buy him a little something because you know it's going to make him happy?
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
Yeah, so you've got... That's altruism right there. That's
sure. Oh yeah, I'm shinier today than I was before. I mean, I'm genuinely a better person
right.
than I was
yeah.
15 years
but there's,
ago.
But there's that sense of like, oh, I just want to see them. Like it's buying yeah. the perfect Christmas gift for someone and watching them open it. It's like, oh, it's so great.
Andy came home and he said, I don't know who this is for, but I saw this and it's adorable. And it's a Winnie the Pooh coffee cup. And I was like, really? And I said, and I know someone, my friend Allison Kalama, who is Winnie the Pooh crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Levity loves some Winnie the Pooh. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, that is for Allison Kalama. And he said, is it? And I said, unless you think it's so cute, you want it. And he goes, no, let's give it to Allison. She thinks she'll like it. So, I mean, it's,
right.
he is such a good person. He makes me a better person.
Mm-hmm.
He makes me want to be a better man. Yes. He makes me want to be Jack Nicklaus.
You know,
Jack Nicklaus, isn't that a,
that's a golfer.
That's a golfer.
Yeah, interesting.
First error recorded. Congratulations, Rangers. Couldn't go an entire episode. Nicholson was the man I'm thinking of. And because didn't I say earlier, it was, right, because you were talking about Joseph Campbell.
Campbell and not Joseph Conrad.
Conrad, which is who I thought. Joseph Campbell, he wrote about...
famous mythologist.
Mythologist.
Yes, mythologist.
Does he make up myths?
No.
Why do I not know who Joseph Campbell
I'm
is?
I'm surprised you don't. He, from the 50s through when he died, I think in the early 80s, he was a man who
killed him.
Who, yeah.
Yeah.
Don't know.
Okay.
He was a man who, he was like one of the first comparative religious guys. Like he looked at all the religious myths and said, hey, guess what? There's lots of flood myths out there.
Oh, was he that guy?
Yes.
He was like, do we see a pattern?
Yes. He's the one, you know, the hero's journey you hear about in story writing and script writing
yeah.
all the time. That's him.
Okay.
He's the one who identified the hero's journey. He wrote books about it.
Okay.
And he was interviewed by Bill Moyers on a famous PBS series in the 70s. Where he talks about the hero's journey, and he even talked about Star Wars in this interview.
I saw that. For some reason, his name did not internalize.
That's Joseph Campbell.
Not Joseph Conrad. Not Joseph Conrad, who was also very prolific.
And wrote The Heart of Darkness,
and Apocalypse Now was based on it, mm-hmm. and it's all good. So,
which is also a hero's
have
journey.
Have you ever read any Stephen Mitchell?
Yes. He's also a Buddhist writer, right?
Right. He translated the Tao.
Yeah. So he's more of a scholar.
Yeah.
Yes.
And
he's married to Byron Katie.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Who's Byron Katie?
Byron Katie is the lady who asks the question, is it true? Like she's the one who has you asking your thoughts.
She has a website.
She does, called The Work, and it's amazing. If you
have
need
you done
to,
The Work,
yes, just
I tried to do The Work
through
and I
the
was
paperwork
like...
thing, and I actually went to an evening thing with her, and we all did The Work with
okay.
her. And it's like if you're hooked on something and you're in the middle of a thing and you can't let go of something,
yeah.
Her work is pretty amazing in that area.
When I was a child, my father said, dictatorships keep people busy. He was constantly saying,
that's why the trains ran on time.
Yes. And he was like, it's like, you don't want to give people a lot of freedom because
mm-hmm.
it makes them think too much. And, so what
really the opposite of my father experience, Jackie.
Oh, no. I think George Carlin wanted to sit around and do some thinking. And tick tock. And right. My dad, he was like, but he, our lives are full of enough time.
Yes.
That we can, because I love stuff like The Work.
Mm-hmm.
And Maria Bamford has turned me on to, she loves a workbook like nobody's business. Her fiance, this
love
very
it.
Nice man, Scott,
uh-huh.
is willing to do a workbook with her.
Wow.
And she is
that's
like,
a fiance.
That is a fiance.
Because my husband, I'm into all this stuff, and my husband looks at me like, yeah.
Very
we're
polite.
We're not doing
very polite.
No.
Yeah. Andy Ashcraft, a lot of polite nodding. He's like, what'd you learn? And because my throat has been, I've been having this weird cough, and I'm speculating what it might be.
Yes.
Because it's not in my chest, right. And it's literally just in my vocal cords, which is terrifying. I'm sure Louise Hayes is saying that I'm not saying something.
Yeah, you're not speaking your truth, Jackie.
So we don't mean to mock because we love this shit.
We do.
I do love this and shit, but it's also mockable.
And we have healthy skepticism too.
Right. Yes. Right. Because you still have to go to work in the morning.
Yes.
You still have to earn a living.
And so, at some point you need to go to the doctor.
Right.
You know, it's like that, people, like you go and you get your acupuncture and all that, and then you go to the Western doctor to save your heart attack.
Exactly. And Andy Ashcraft is like, when will you go to the Western doctor?
Right.
And I was like, well, I'm seeing the acupuncture and I'm getting some heller work done. And then I'm going to, and then I got the chiropractor looking at it and there's an herbalist.
And I'm doing some Alexander technique.
And he was like, yeah, anyway, so there's an eye, ear, nose, and throat guy that might be able to do something. I was like, but it's my vocal cords. What if he wants to cut me? He said, yeah, you don't have to be cut.
Yeah.
You just say no
yeah.
and then keep drinking honey and tea.
Yes.
Because what my heller work lady is like, I think it's sugar. I think it's sugar and wheat.
Mm.
And my chiropractor's like, what's your caffeine intake? And my acupuncturist is just like, well, you're just stressed out a little bit. You're just stressed out. Let's get your chakras all in a row.
Yeah.
Let's get your fan belt rebuckled.
Right.
Or whatever it is. Your points all pointing in the right direction.
And I'm a bit of a, I'm very kind of somatic oriented. I feel my anxiety in my body with
okay.
symptoms. I mean, that's why I was a panic attack person.
Oh, right.
So for me, it's always like, is it anxiety
mm-hmm.
or is this really go to the doctor time? You know,
right.
I mean, it's like, it's that thing for me. And so, and I play the game a little bit. And then if it gets bad enough and I really want to know, and now that I'm in my 50s, I go to the doctor.
Nothing to be done. I'm about to be in my 50s.
I go to the doctor. Because
you go to the doctor.
I do, because I'm in my 50s. And it's like, this is when the shit starts to break down.
Right. Well, I have the reason I went to the heller work lady, which is this deep tissue body work thing, right?
It's like Rolfing.
It's like Rolfing, but
it's gnarly.
It's and it's super, but it's very deep. And what she's doing is she's taking the fascia.
Yeah, the fascia.
And elongating
yeah,
it.
Yeah, it's painful.
What I might want to do is work out. I might want to stretch and then I wouldn't have
to have someone
do it manually.
Digging. Painfully digging into your fascia.
I was like, so the back of my neck and right on the base of my spine and in my shoulder blade really hurts. I call it my Asperger's hump. It's whenever I have an emotional reaction to something I don't want to do.
Right.
Whenever I'm sad because I'm doing something I don't want to do.
Right.
Right. Grow up. Anyway. Jesus Christ, Jackie. Anyway, but the, yeah. It's so she worked on that and it's actually a lot better.
Oh, good.
Sure. What the heck? But I do, I mean, I should exercise. We should all be exercising.
Yeah. We need to just be moving the body a little bit.
Right.
I saw people running in the rain last night. My husband and I, we went to the market and they're running in the rain and my husband's like, show offs.
Oh my God. When I lived in Minneapolis and it was something like 19 or 35 below without the wind chill. And I was driving an 83, Ford Escort.
Mm.
And I hadn't closed the hood when I had refilled the oil that morning, as I did many mornings. Cause it was.
Keep it going. Keep it going.
It's an 83 Ford. I believe it was 1995.
Bless its heart.
Bless its heart for keep running. Mm. And, the hood flew up and hit the windshield. And so I had to stop my car and I saw somebody run up and I was like, oh, this nice man's going to put my hood down for me. He was jogging. I was like, oh, I guess I got to get out of the car. Boo. Anyway, so let's do this. Let's talk about you're writing a memoir, or is it done?
It's written. It'll be published in September of 2015.
Of 2015. What's,
yeah.
Does it have a name, or is it?
It's also called A Carlin Home Companion.
Oh, very nice.
Yes.
Very nice.
Based on the solo show, but 335 pages of it. In depth.
Are there pictures?
There are pictures.
That's it.
There's good pictures.
Somebody tweeted the other day something that really really resonated with me. He said, I may be an asshole, but at least I'm not in love with my own baby pictures. And I was like, I'm kind of in love with my own pictures of myself as a child
a little bit.
Yeah.
I'm obsessed.
It doesn't, because even
no
I never
wonder
thought
we're performers.
As, yes. It's like, even though I never thought I was good looking as a kid, you look back on it and you're like, it doesn't matter. 19 is still 19.
Oh, absolutely.
19, you could be the ugliest 19 in the world, and you're like, 19.
You know what? And let me say that keeps going, because I've been looking at my pictures of me in my mid-30s, and, you know, you're my mid-30s. I felt, you know, not young enough and not beautiful enough and mm-hmm. not skinny enough. And I look now and I'm like, why would I even take that for granted for one moment?
Right. Why didn't I just celebrate the joy that was 36?
So now I'm celebrating my 50, 51.
Yep.
Because at 70, I'm going to be looking back going, man, I was 50 and I had so much energy and life in me.
Yep.
And
yeah.
So I'm really trying to be really like here now with it all and not be.
This has been a great episode of The Dork Forest, let me just say.
I'm feeling more whole and in the present.
Are you? Are you feeling right there?
I am.
It's very lovely.
Yes.
It's I gave you the Tempest video game.
Atari.
An Atari. Pint glass. I have a pint glass collection.
Of course you do.
Why wouldn't I?
Of course.
This is the Iron Fist.
Mm.
And then that's a New York subway thing. Anyway, so Falcon Theater, January 28th through March.
First
is your solo show.
25 performances. I've never done 25 of anything, and I'm going to be doing 25 performances.
Is it on the weekends or is it weeknights?
It's
or?
Wednesday through Sunday.
Wow.
5 weeks, Wednesday through Sunday, as if I was in New York on Broadway, but I'm not. I'm in Toluca Lake, but
it'll
feel like
it. But the Falcon Theater is a beautiful little theater.
It's a gorgeous little theater.
Gary Marshall.
Yes.
Gary Marshall, by the way, when I did the first year I did Last Comic Standing,
mm-hmm.
he was one of the judges.
Yeah.
And
they have quotation marks around
that. They do because they were not allowed to make any decisions. And because NBC did.
I think they changed that. I don't know. Roseanne was on this year. I haven't talked to her about it yet.
Right. And I think that they the last two seasons, they were doing a nice job, actually, of trying to make it more like Top Chef.
Yes, exactly.
My favorite episode was when they sent all the comics to Bed Bath & Beyond.
I didn't see that
and
one.
And they had to come up with like 5 minutes or something of prop comedy.
Wow.
And Carrot Top judged it.
Oh, that's brilliant.
It was perfect.
Yeah. See, that's... Like,
that's a real
that's
task.
It. Yes, it is that's, a real
make
yes.
Will Durst and, judge your political comedy.
Yes,
make,
yes.
You know, make Brian Regan judge your dark, linear, you know, like
right.
observational comedy.
Yeah.
You know, how awesome would that
that's...
be?
That
those are real tasks,
yes.
right? So Gary Marshall was one of the, it was him, Tim Meadows, is that right?
Mm.
Could have been Saturday Night Live.
Mm-hmm.
And I think... Law and Order guy, whatever.
Dun dun.
Right, the comic who's on Law and Order forever.
Richard Belzer.
Oh, that's it.
A friend of mine.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, but
he judged you.
I'm sure they all judged me. I'm judging me right now. So, but Gary Marshall said to me uh-huh. after my set, and they didn't air it because I didn't make the house. They aired Tim Meadows asking me where I was from. But Gary Marshall, for the love of the little tiny baby Jesus, I wish I had this on tape somewhere. Gary Marshall said to me, "You're very talented." Guess what? That's Gary Marshall talking out loud.
Yeah.
Right at you.
That's Happy Days. That's
he owns the fucking theater. That's the reason I've told that story.
Yeah. And I haven't met him yet, and I'm looking forward, because his daughter runs the theater. I'm looking forward. I hear during rehearsals, he'll pop in. And he may give me notes. And I was like, I cannot wait for Gary Marshall.
I will take a Gary Marshall
Are
notes.
You kidding? Hello, pretty
Holy.
Women. Hello.
All of it.
Yeah.
All of it.
I know. It's exciting.
There's no movie in the world that he's been in that he has not made better.
True.
A League of Their Own.
Right.
So many great cameo stuff.
Yeah.
He's just, and I love Penny Marshall.
Yep.
And I love all the Marshalls.
The Marshalls are lovely.
I can't wait to meet them again. I've never actually met any
you'll
of them.
You'll come to the Falcon Theater and you'll meet them.
I will come to the Falcon Theater starting at the end of January. I'll be back in town in February, and it goes till March 1st, and that'll be great. Kelly Carlin, Kelly_Carlin on Twitter, kellycarlin.com. Next September, buy the book. People, you've been wowed. I don't know. I've never said that before, but it was really a good one. So thanks so much for listening, Rangers. And you know the rules. Take care of each other out there.
My hat, my hat, my hat. They're dancing around my hat. My hat, my hat, my hat. Well, what do you think of that? If it looks like a Mexican hat dance and it sounds like a Mexican hat dance, it's most likely a Mexican hat dance. So take off your hat and let's dance.
Yay! Oh, my God. Why don't we just call that as the end of the show?